Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at my bookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. You name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code ZABE, and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Here we go. Thursday, May 8th, 2025. Thank you for downloading. We got AJ Perez today on the show, a Big J journalist. Formerly of Front Office Sports, formerly of USA Today, he is now a documentary filmmaker, and he has collaborated. He is one of the executive producers on the upcoming Netflix, The Untold Story on One Brett Favre, coming out on May 20th. They've already put out Netflix the Shooting Guards documentary about the unbelievable and idiotic episode between Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden, with the guns in the locker room for the Wizards. And that's already out. I've got to watch that. And I also am looking forward to the following week. They got a documentary on the Liver King. If you don't know who the Liver King is, he was a guy on social media, jacked to the moon. I mean, a full-on cartoon comic book character of muscle. All tanned, all greased up, big beard. And he purported to get that way by eating nothing but raw liver. Well, turns out he was actually taking all the stands. So I'm looking forward to checking those out. In the meantime, the NBA playoffs continue apace. And so far, after last night's collapse by the Indiana Pacers, collapse by the Cavaliers to the Indiana Pacers, there's not been a home team yet to win in the second round. And that's a fascinating thing. The NBA has been on a nice bit of momentum now that LeBron is out, so we don't have the LeBron fatigue that many people do. And there's been very exciting games that have been tooth and nail and great efforts each way. Buzzer beating shots, thrilling comebacks. The ratings reflect that in the playoffs. The NBA is on a nice run. They're up, I don't know, about 6-10%, something like that. Still far off of the Michael Jordan years, and I'm not sure they're ever going to get that rating number back, but it's been better as of late. So my colleague Brian Butch asked a good question a couple days ago before we went on the air on the show, and that was, what if the intensity of these games in the NBA were like this all year long? And I go, it's an interesting what if. Forget whether or not it'll ever happen. Spoiler, it won't. But what if? My first thought was, well, number one, these guys are going to break. Steph Curry, by the way, out for at least games 2, 3, and 4 with a torn hamstring, grade 1 tear of his hamstring. Not good. Today's NBA athlete, while we bemoan the whole, you know, load management stuff, they're injured more. They're broken more. Their connective tissue goes snap, crackle, pop more. Once upon a time, NBA players played 82 of 82, and they slogged through the season. They traveled far less luxuriously as well. And guys rarely got as hurt as they get now because the athletes are more finely tuned. They're more explosive. They train harder. And they, you know, when they put themselves to full exertion, they break. So, you know, I don't like load management, just like everybody else doesn't like it. But I think if they played this hard for the regular season, then they would break more. That's thought number one about what if. The second thought I had was, well, what if they played this hard all year? I said to myself, I go, well, why? All the teams that are any good end up making the playoffs anyway. So why? In fact, other than Dallas, this round of the final eight teams is the same as it was last year, except for Dallas. Somebody put the graphic of last year's logos, this year's logos, and they're like, whoa, Dallas, what happened to Dallas? We know what happened to Dallas. NBA teams that are good tend to stay good or good enough to be in the playoffs for a good long time. It's not a fickle thing like it is in the NFL or certainly baseball or anything else. Of course, baseball has a few super teams that have spent to the moon, and it's just a joke, really. So my second thought is, well, what if they played this hard all year is, well, why? What's the point? My third thought is, even if they played this hard, tooth and nail on a Tuesday night between Memphis and Sacramento in the middle of February, I still wouldn't watch because my time to watch the NBA is now. My time to care about the NBA is from here until middle of June. This is my season. Kind of like my college basketball season has basically been shrunk to 2 months, February and March, once football has subsided. Football, of course, consumes the previous 6 months, September, October, November, December, January, 5 months. Good thing I can count with one hand. And then you've got baseball that I pay attention to and watch a little bit of and go to a game or two all summer, and then I really lock in come October. Baseball's like a one-month season for me. That's just how it's sorted out in my life, and I know that you're probably thinking, well, isn't it your job to watch all these leagues and all these teams year-round? And I guess the answer is kind of, maybe, sort of it's my job. Depends on how you view it. I think the average fan is not watching every single month of every season, unless they're gambling on it or it's just their thing. They just love the NBA. So they're going to watch it from the start of the season in November all the way through to now. The other question that I have is, so the Cavaliers shot 7 of 47 from three-point range in losing Game 2 in stunning fashion. That, along with the collapse late, more on that in just a second, is really bad. And you would think, wow, they missed 40 threes. That's got to be a record. No. The Celtics one night earlier missed a new record of 45 three-pointers because they were 15 of 60. Question. Are you really bothered by what NBA shot selection has become? Does it matter that teams shoot so many threes? Do teams missing so many threes bother you? I think I would like more balance, but I also think there is a heavily romanticized notion of, I want to see fundamental bounce passes, getting the ball into the post, that kind of stuff. Working for a good, old-fashioned, honest two-point shot. Maybe a bank shot, yes. Bounce pass, thumbs out, bank shot, layup. Part of the problem, I believe, is it's too fucking hard to get a shot off now. Anytime you go into any congested area or even attempt to go to the hole, there are quick-ass, explosive monsters with super long arms who are going to contest those shots in the playoffs when they matter. And so going for a highly contested two, which requires dribbling through traffic, hoping you don't get fouled, and if you do get fouled, you get the call, is very hard to do. So it's probably makes more sense. I think a lot of teams, when I watch the NBA now, they take threes because they're the only open shots. The ones that are twos become highly contested. And I'm not sure there's any way to, say, mitigate against that. But it's been a pretty amazing NBA playoffs, at least so far here in the second round. Now, back to the Cavaliers' collapse. There is prevent defense in football. We've all seen it, right? And in basketball, not so much, but there's one little thing that happens, and I've seen it both in the pros and college, and you'll know it when you see it. You will whistle and snap your fingers like Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and you'll point at the TV like, there it is. It is the uncontested layup allowed by a team that thinks the game is over. It happens in almost every collapse that a team suffers in the final couple minutes. And there have only been now three times. I think the record of teams trailing by seven or more in the final minute of a game in the playoffs are 3-1,154. The three wins, two of them by the Pacers this year. Last night against the Cavaliers, and before that against the Bucks. That's a pretty amazing number right there. But, and this also happened in the Bucks game. They thought they had the game on ice. They were up, I think, seven with just over a minute to go. And they allowed a Halliburton uncontested layup. It happened again in the Cavs game. 117-110. Baskets and good looks are as hard to come by for the last 10 minutes of this game as you've ever seen. Teams are digging in. Defenders are going chest to chest. Everything is contested, right? Suddenly they're up seven with a minute three to go, and they think, okay, we basically got it. I mean, yeah, okay. And they let Halliburton go right to the rim. Unbelievable. I go, there it is. That's it right there. Now, they did inbound the ball. I think Mitchell had two free throws to put him back up seven, just under 2 minutes to go. So you could say, well, that, you know, they got back up seven again with even a few ticks, fewer ticks on the clock. So that didn't cost him the game. I'm not saying that one layup cost him the game. I'm saying it is an indication that the mindset is not right with a team that thinks the game is over and they're not prepared to finish out the game. And next thing you know, the Cavaliers just implode, crater in the final minute, which give credit to the Pacers and Halliburton because they're the ones forcing it. But man, talk about tighten the collar. Wow. That was it. I believe the Cavaliers in the final minute, they didn't get the ball past half court. They committed an offensive foul. They allowed 5 points off of missed free throws. And it was a total disaster. Three turnovers as well. Totally threw the game away. What would you say is the definition of a super fan in sports? I ask because there's a fascinating video that came out of the draft involving Packer fans, and it asked them, where did Jordan Love go to college? And the first seven or eight superfans, many of whom were dressed up in their superfan gear, whiffed. And they didn't know. Or they said UCLA. Wrong. What's weird is that, okay, why would they know? Nobody saw Jordan Love in college. He played at Utah State. And he didn't play once he started, you know, with the Packers. He was put on the shelf for three full years. Now, if you claim to be a superfan, you should still know where he went to college. But it's just funny that, you know, these fans are like, hey man, I'm a super fan. Yeah, season ticket since birth. Here is what the video sounded like, and you'll have to find it on social media. I'll try to retweet it so you can see it, but here you go. Packer quote super fans.
Bandwagon or diehard?
Diehard.
Where did Jordan Love
diehard.
Go to college?
Well, I've been a diehard for a long time.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Diehard. I got the head on me,
folks. Where did Jordan Love go to college?
I don't know.
Diehard.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
That's embarrassing.
Die Hard. Unlike Viking fans.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
I don't know idea.
Die Hard.
Haven't missed a game in, 15 years, son?
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Oh, boy.
Born, raised.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Jordan Love? Nevada.
Bruh.
Die Hard.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
To college and...
Die Hard.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
UCLA.
I've been to every playoff game ever played.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
To Utah State.
Die Hard.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Utah. But he grew up in Bakersfield.
Die Hard. Jeez, I grew up in Bart Starr.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Utah State.
Oh, Die Hard. Day I was born.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Utah State.
Season ticket holder.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Utah State.
Die Hard.
Where did Jordan Love go to college?
Jordan Love went to Utah State.
What's the most diehard thing about
if somebody has a birthday party on a Sunday, don't go. Have to sit in the same chair. One time I got a purple cup and drank out of it and we lost.
This is yours.
Being an ultimate diehard fan, Tick Pick wants to hook you up with tickets. Pro, can't be serious.
There you go. So, look, they could have interviewed 1,000 Packer fans just to get the 7 guys that didn't know Utah State. So you can't judge off of that. But in a related sort of, wait a minute, I thought he was a super fan. Guess who missed game 1 of his beloved Knicks at the Celtics to attend the Met Gala? That's right, so-called superfan Spike Lee. Now, Spike Lee might have been paid a handsome fee, appearance fee, to be at the Met Gala, or he just realized that this is good for his brand to be seen and photographed with a silly-ass-looking man purse strapped around his neck. But you would think, with this Knicks team, with Jalen Brunson going off the way he is, that he wouldn't have missed being courtside for game 1 in Boston. And I know it's in Boston, but he's got the money to be able to fly up there and the money to be able to get a seat courtside. You would have thought Spike Lee would have been there. At least I would have. So, maybe not as much of a super fan as he says. Quick break coming up. AJ Perez, executive producer of the Favre documentary, The Untold Story of the Rise and Fall of Brett Favre, on Netflix, coming out on May 20th. You're listening to the Zabecast. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process, or you've been struggling to get your job posts seen on other sites, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. Want to know how fast Indeed really is? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at MyBookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to MyBookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah. Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. You name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at MyBookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code Zabe. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag.
Everybody wish they could be an NFL quarterback. You get all the notoriety, you know, you get paid all the money.
Brett Favre was a cult-like, iconic figure.
People say he was a football god.
There are a lot of reasons why you might question Brett Favre's inner goodness.
Allegations that he sent lewd texts and photos to a New York Jet employee.
Brett Favre ultimately destroyed my life.
In the life of Brett Favre, not everything is what it seems.
He starts to go through life thinking, I can do whatever I want. At what level does that stop?
I was at a game and someone said Brett Favre wanted my phone number. And I just kept saying no. I started getting text messages. And then I started getting voicemails when I was like, oh, I'm in serious trouble here.
Have you come over tonight?
Maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he got caught up in a federal welfare misappropriation scandal.
You take money intended for the poorest. I don't know how he sleeps at night.
People don't want most of that stuff to come out. People want their heroes.
When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
AJ, Zabe, how are you?
Good. How's it going, Steve?
Good. How is my fellow Loudoun County resident and taxpayer doing these days? Where do you live?
I live in Leesburg.
Where are you from?
I'm from Gilroy, California. So
you're a California guy. What brought you to D.C. area or the greater DMV?
USA Today hired me to cover NASCAR, and I was working out of Long Beach at the time, covering open wheel. And they needed to move out here. They said I couldn't cover NASCAR from California. So
yeah, okay. And that's a lot of left turns ago, and now you've moved on. And of course, you were at Front Office Sports for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, 4.5 years. Yeah. It was a great time, and we got to do this documentary. So it was a blast. When I was like the 9th or 10th employee when they started getting going, kind of like, you know, they were around for a while, but they got to kind of geared up and hired me and Amanda Krstovich, who was still there, was one of the best college writers in the nation. And so they kind of just hired us about 5 years ago, you know, during the pandemic, which I wasn't looking for work in journalism, but I was just here doing my gym thing. And we kind of went back, and it was a blast.
That's great. So the trailer is out for Netflix's Untold, The Fall of Favre. You are the executive producer on that particular documentary, director.
One of them. Yeah.
You're one of them. There's more than one.
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple others, but of all the EPs, I think I worked more directly, I think, than any of the EPs, and not as much as the director and a couple of the associate producers or so, but it was a long, I was there from the pitch to Netflix to, you know, the completion. So,
Rebecca Gitlitz is credited as the director, and it's put out by Netflix in their Untold Stories series, which I have enjoyed. Some people have said, well, they're not like 30 for 30s. I think we're in the golden age, AJ, of documentaries in sports, and that's a wonderful thing. And you take each sort of brand or vertical on their own. But the Favre one is going to have huge interest for my listeners on 97.3 The Game because of his legendary Packer career before he went to the Jets and then the Vikings. But I want you to tell me, after doing this documentary, is Favre more of a villain, a ruffian, or a guy who played football and may well be well on his way to unfortunate brain traumatic injury?
Yeah, I was there. I got tipped off the day before he announced Parkinson's diagnosis last year. But that's a sad part of it. Now, there's really, having covered CTE and traumatic brain injuries, the research is still ongoing. We don't know a lot about it. Now, was Parkinson's, was it because of football? Maybe,
right?
Maybe not. It's kind of, but yeah, I mean, for Favre, it was kind of like, you know, this, like you mentioned, our director, Becca, she's, we kind of went into this with the same mindset. No one's all good. No one's all bad. You know, there was a lot. There was a lot that went on. The great things. I mean, Favre, you know, Hall of Fame career, Super Bowl title. Did he kind of turn or really turn around the Packers? And he's as you'll see in the documentary, we show how responsible he was for the rise, right, and all the stadium upgrades and everything else that's happened. And then you just guys had the draft. You know, you could say the draft kind of started with Favre. You know, basically Favre turning the franchise around 2 decades ago, and you guys got the draft. And it's kind of like there's like almost a straight line. He did so much. He means so much, not only to Wisconsin, and I know this because my grandparents are from there. I have cousins there.
Oh,
I have
really?
A couple cousins that aren't happy about me making this documentary.
Oh, I can imagine.
Manitowoc County.
Manitowoc County. Okay, yes. Yeah. On the way up to Green Bay. Got it.
Yeah. So I don't. I mean, there's so I. So when you go into this, and you know, you start. I started covering the welfare scandal. That's how it kind of started, and then this documentary came about, and I was obviously pitched it, and we had at Front Office Sports with a startup. It was the biggest thing that they did. This is the biggest thing I've done in my career, and I've done this 25 years, and I want to tell the whole story. So it's like you have to tell the good and the bad, and you know there was I was thankfully the trailer got released, so I could talk about it a little more. But yeah, Jen Sturgeon. That story was not covered, and there's a lot of misconceptions about her that are out there, and I think people are going to learn a lot how that all went down.
Okay, yeah, so, she is featured prominently on that, claims that Favre ruined her life, and I'm looking forward to hearing the full story of it, because I'm like, ruin your life, okay, I want to hear why you think that. But
yes,
but that's a whole different thing. So it debuts May 20th. It's on Netflix. Of course you have Netflix. Yes. And of course you chill, people. If not, subscribe to it and get it. It's going to be pretty cool. So what I've always wondered about Favre, and I never understood this when it was ongoing, and I've done a hit on a local station in Milwaukee, had done it for 24 years prior to taking this job at 97.3 The Game. And when this happened, I didn't understand it. I still don't understand it. Why did Favre feel compelled to stick it to the Packers by swimming his way to Minnesota, their rival, through New York? I get the Aaron Rodgers bitterness because they drafted his replacement when he felt like he had a lot left in the tank. Was that also what drove Favre to want to stick it to him?
I really think it was kind of a big part of it was just not wanting to be there for mini camps and stuff. I think that was it. I think that was if he, and then, you know, you'll see in the documentary, we do address this. It's like, you know, he kind of went back and forth so many off seasons and to a point where, you know, the Packers brass were kind of backed into a corner. It's like, we got Rodgers, you know, he's been here a couple of years, you know, what do we do? And, you know, Favre keeps waffling. And then finally the Packers put their foot down, you know, Ted Thompson did. And then you kind of had, it was a great because, you know, we have Peter King kind of breaking this down, minute by minute, basically how it happened. So I don't want to ruin it, but yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I think Bus Cook and Favre may have kind of misread things, or at that time.
The weird thing is, at that time of Favre's career was kind of the rise of the increase of artificial importance of the stupid May and June minicamp cycle in the NFL. I'm old enough to remember, AJ, when nobody gave a crap about it. In fact, that a lot of these programs didn't exist back in the day. It was like, we'll see in late July at training camp. But because the media gets so much juice out of these May and June nonsense get-togethers that I think Favre was like, I don't need this. It's no good. Why do I have to come back? Yet the pressure was building that, well, everyone else is doing it, right? So where are you, number four?
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like, and some of these haven't cut back. The NFLPA kind of in the last couple CBAs kind of got some of these,
sure,
some of these kind of cut where they actually became voluntary. You know, they were, you know, they always say voluntary workouts, but you kind of had to be there. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of changed, maybe Favre, especially with the cutback of padded practices, you know, and contact practices. I think that, you know, Favre, this happened, you know, 20 something years ago, you know, maybe Favre would have played another year for the Packers.
Right.
But it was kind of like, yeah, going into the Jets, that was not a big deal, right? It's like AFC, then going to the Vikings, that's the one. And that's when the Jen Sturgeon stuff came out. This happened 2 years. That came out 2 years after it happened. You know, this was not, and we explained how it came out and everything, but it was 2 years later. It was, this happened at the Jets, and then he's playing for the Vikings, and in 2010 it comes out. And it was just kind of like, you know, and really, the way he addressed it initially when he was first questioned after Deadspin ran the initial story, that's when it was kind of like, that's when the media attention got more, but this is before the Me Too movement.
Right.
And I think there was no, you know, and it, yes, the sports media is a little more diverse now, but it's still largely white male. And back then it was a lot white, much more white male.
Certainly.
So yeah, it wasn't covered the way it would be covered now.
The Sturgis thing happened at the peak of Deadspin's sort of emergence on the scene. And it was one of the most widely read blogs on the internet for sports and football every day. So when that story broke and the whole thing about the dick pics to this young gal, Ms. Sturgis, it blew up. It was fodder for everybody, but we were yet to be into the social media age and nobody was podcasting at the time. So it was all about blogs and it was kind of this perfect storm of, oh my God, can you believe this? Now, when it comes to Sturgis, she was sort of just a super fan down there at Florida State with her outfits, and now she's got a job with the Jets. How does she claim Favre, quote, ruined her life?
I don't want to get – it's kind of like it was so good that I don't want to –
You don't want to give it away.
Take away her thunder. But it was just like, you know, her contract wasn't renewed with the Jets.
Right.
And
even though she was the victim. Even though she was the victim – and didn't really do anything to solicit this. It was an embarrassing thing. The Jets just wanted to go away, and that swept her up into it. Like, well, you're going to go away too. And now who's going to hire her?
And she moved on. It was 2 years. I would say she was wronged by the Jets. It's kind of like, Favre moves on, makes more millions with the Vikings, plays two more seasons. She was kind of, that stunted her career. Yeah. I mean, she was on Versus at the time. Remember Versus back in the day? Yeah. Well, when that launched, she was on that. And then this Deadspin story comes out and her show gets canceled. You know, it's like a raw deal
right there.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, she didn't want the story to come out. She was trying to move past it. Yes, she was, creeped out, and more than creeped out. It was harassment.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
And
it's not unusual for a reporter to have a player's phone number and text number. That's not unusual. So you can't say, well, why did she even have his number? That's par for the course.
Oh, she didn't have his number. That's the whole thing. It is wild. There's some new stuff coming up. It's like, there's not, I was there for this interview last year in California, and about half an hour in, I'm like, this is going to change so much. This is going to change my, kind of like, we knew what we got from Jen was just so, she was so open and so honest and so emotional. You could feel it. It was there. I was just like, it was so, of all the interviews we did for this, we did dozens and dozens of this for this documentary that, this was like, this was, yes, it was like a big moment in Favre's, off-field stuff. You got that. You got Jen. You got the two masseuses that happened around the same time with the Jets. And then you have the Mississippi welfare scandal, which is what I've covered the last 3 or 4 years. Right. But it was like, that interview is so, it's so emotional. And it's like, you mentioned The Untold. I watched the Shooting Guards one on the Wizards with Crittenden and Gilbert Arenas last night that just debuted. Amazing. I mean, I think this is going to be, and next week's going to be the Liver King. If you're on social media, I'm a personal trainer.
Oh, love Liver King. Yeah, total
that
fraud.
One's gonna be
steroid gobbling
that one.
Liver King. Yeah. He's like, you can look like me, just eat a lot of liver.
Yeah. Right. It was like the entire, and I have a personal trainer. I'm like, you can tell. I mean, I've covered PEDs too. So it's like, I'm like, you don't look like that normally. I mean, I work out almost every day.
Yeah.
I eat fairly well, and I don't look like that.
No. Right. You can't do that with the help of the stands, as we like to say. Stanozolol, Standrol, all the illegal stuff.
HGH,
that works. Oh, exactly.
All that stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this welfare scandal. How bad is it for Favre?
Oh, it's fine now. I mean, I think, there was...
Because of
when
Trump?
I saw this project... No, okay. No, not necessarily because of Trump. It's because of Merrick Garland. I mean, I think our former attorney general under Biden, he chose to, using the word entrap is a strong word to use, but they ran a sting on several black politicians in Jackson, Mississippi,
oh,
which
really?
Is struggling with their water, struggling with so many things, a white flight, they really, it's the state's capital, Mississippi's capital, and sure. It's so under.
So this underfunded. Was under this was under Garland, whose Justice Department ran.
This started so long ago. It actually started under Trump, his first term.
First Trump, okay. And
it was basically the,
so it was like a sting to get some corrupt black.
Oh yeah, sorry, the sting. Sting was over about this time last year is when the sting happened. And they indicted last summer. Okay. But they got the mayor, they got a couple of council members, and and they got the DA who charged the very first people in the Mississippi welfare scandal. The Mississippi welfare scandal, Favre got attached to it. It would have been spring of 2020, right after the pandemic started. Right. And he got attached to it. And 2 weeks prior from his name coming out, he did a public service announcement with the attorney general for the state of Mississippi. There were so many things, and the text came out a couple years later, and we saw, one of the big ones, basically, when I'll summarize it, was like, will the media find out?
Right.
Find out about what? What if you're getting the money honestly and truthfully, who cares? He's never been charged. His business partner for that drug company, the concussion company, Prevacus, was charged. There was a meeting at his house. About a half dozen people were there for Prevacus. He's the only person at that meeting who wasn't charged criminally. Now, the statute of limitations probably has run out for anything they could charge Favre with, at least, federally.
So he's in the clear, in other words.
Yeah. So wow. I think, obviously we changed administrations, and Merrick Garland didn't pursue Favre. And it actually started, it started so long ago. The federal investigation started during Trump's final few months in office, the first time around. And they really didn't,
So
they're kind of taking the back seat to the local prosecutors, but they could have, the feds have charged several people too.
Yeah. It seems like when I first saw it, I'm like, okay, I get it. It looks really bad. And maybe he was in there up to his elbows trying to grab money meant for the poor. But I also know that there are scams in life, AJ, which are illegal. And then there are what a scam, which means it's legal, but I can't believe it's legal. It's so good. What I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
When you say to somebody like, wow, what a scam. You don't mean it literally is a scam. It's not illegal. It's just an incredibly good deal. I thought that Favre must have landed right on the border of those two different understandings of scam.
Yeah, he's still a defendant in the lawsuit. He's one of about 20 plus defendants in the lawsuit where the state's trying to recover the money.
And he gave some of the money back as well.
$1.1 million. And yes, Chad White, the state auditor, is still going after him for interest on that. And that's still being played out in court. But yeah, the $5 million to the USM, the USM volleyball facility, and the $2 million that went to that drug company, Prevacus. I think Favre's house, he's thinking about selling it. I read a couple of weeks ago, $14 million. If he would have come out when his name got attached in spring 2020 and said, yeah, this wasn't my money, this $7 million didn't go to me. It went to the drug company and it went to a University of Southern Miss Volleyball Center.
Right.
If he would have just repaid it, I think he would not have lost. I think he wouldn't have lost his endorsements. He wouldn't have lost his media gigs. I think he could have been contrite at the front. And would there be a documentary? I don't know. I think there still would have been a Brett Favre documentary at some point, but there wouldn't be anything about the welfare scandal in it. Maybe a mention of it. But he fought, he's denied some of the start that he knew that knowing that these are federal welfare dollars. So he stuck to it.
Yeah. I know this, that amongst Packer fans and the team and just the organization and the community, he's in what I call a bit of a hushed tones category now, where yes, you of course talk about Favre because most people don't know the inner details of the scandal and whatnot. You're like, oh yeah, Favre, he's not prominent. Now, a lot of that damage came on his way out the door, forcing his way out and then eventually to the Vikings and really hurting the Packers badly in, at least one season of playing for him. So it's just fascinating to me, AJ, that he is a Hall of Fame quarterback who should be printing money in the media space now in whatever way he wants, a la Brees and Manning and Brady, and he's just kind of out on pariah island.
He was odd. I mean, outside of, you know, he was probably outside of Tom Brady and maybe the Mannings, baby. But when he retired, he still had Wrangler. He still had a lot of brands. You know, more recently had Copperfit, national TV ads all over the place for that. And he was doing all, he was one of the top, probably, he was, you know,
jeans,
in the last
did
two decades.
Comfortable jeans. You could play catch with a football in Mississippi.
And it was like, and it was, so you got, so he was one of the best, you know, post-career, you know, had some of the best career, post-career endorsement deals and media deals. And I just think it kind of all came to, you know, an abrupt end when his name got attached to the Mississippi welfare scandal. Yeah. And you know, you can argue if that was right or not, but, you know, I don't know how many millions he's lost. I mean, then you have to add in legal fees and paying for lawyers and everything, and him suing, you know, him suing Pat McAfee, him suing Shannon Sharpe, and suing the state auditor Shad White for defamation. There was a lot, you know, he did a lot to, or, you know, spent a lot of money trying to clear his name when he, I think, like the people I've talked to since I started to cover this, like he would have came out in 2020 and said, hey, man, I didn't know it was federal welfare funds, which he's been saying for 4 or 5 years now. And just like, and this wasn't, even though I didn't get this money, I'm gonna pay the state back. Now it's not state money; you have to pay back the federal government. These are federal funds. There's no mechanism to repay the federal government from a state level for the misuse of federal welfare funds. It's a very messed up system, and it's not Brett Favre's fault. It's just the system is so messed up. And 95% at the time, 95% of the people who well below the poverty line families, they're, you know, 95%+ were denied these funds. Right. Yet, it wasn't just Brett Favre, but it was a lot of other people who were connected to the government there, the GOP, the Governor Bryant, and then, you know, the current governor. You know, there's a lot of people who were involved. The current governor's personal trainer got money from, you know, was involved in this.
The money
so
goes
it's not
everywhere.
Just Brett Favre.
Yeah, that's one thing we learned. The money goes everywhere. Exit question, maybe the dumbest question I can ask, which is, Brett Favre didn't sit down with you guys for this, did he?
I can't say.
Oh, can't but, say. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Until,
I'll leave it at
until,
that.
Until it airs.
All right.
But yeah, I think
May 20th.
You know, when,
May 20th, May 20th. The rise and fall of Brett Favre on Netflix. Untold stories, including the two documentaries that are already out. One is Shooting Guards. I can't wait to watch that because I was on the air in D.C. presiding over that unbelievable cluster bleep.
Yeah, that was nuts, man.
Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden. You
I
were
covered
here too,
that.
So you
yeah,
covered,
I covered
it
that
as well.
A little bit, yeah.
And
yeah.
then the other documentary coming out between them is what again?
Liver King's next
That's
Tuesday.
That's right,
babies.
Liver
and
King
then,
next
yeah,
Tuesday.
And then May 20th is the fall of Favre, and and I think then I think later this year they'll announce what's the rest of season 5 here.
All right, AJ Perez, appreciate you being with us today. You couldn't do it later in the day because you're going to see Metallica in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is about as awesome as it can possibly get. Have a great time, my friend.
Great, thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it.
Let's end on these. I love a good, perfect, pithy tweet. Somebody tweeted after Jalen Green's subpar game the other night for the Houston Rockets, quote, "I'm not saying I'm good at basketball, but I will say that Jalen Green isn't $35 million better than me at basketball." It's a funny way to put it. Somebody else took a video of Jokic as he was animatedly trying to rally the troops on the bench, and like he was waving his arms and he was urging the guys on for the Nuggets late in their game one. And somebody captioned it, "Jokic's plan for the gorilla." This stupid 100 men versus one gorilla challenge continues to echo and rattle around the social media sphere. And then somebody really went in depth about, okay, hear me out on this regarding here's how 100 men could actually take the gorilla. And I tend to agree with this. You have to have 100 A, tough, B, psychotic and violent men who C, have a collective, very, What's the word I'm looking for? They have to have a very collective motivation to get the gorilla, 100 guys. And as I thought about it, it would have to be 100 guys on death row. If you get 100 guys on death row from the hardest prisons around the country, and you said, if you guys can beat the gorilla, then whoever is not dead gets to go free. You're let out of jail. Then I think those 100 guys would be able to take the gorilla. How that would work exactly, who would be the ones to be the first ones into, you know, the fray, I don't know. But with enough motivation, and everybody has to be motivated, that's the thing. You can't have it 50-50 or even 90-10. It has to be 100 guys fully committed of, okay, this is really worth me jumping in, possibly having my arm bit off by a gorilla while another inmate does a figure four leg lock around its neck, hoping to choke it of oxygen so the rest of the people piling on can finally kill the thing. Now, that would be terribly cruel to the gorilla, and it would be bad for society if the inmates were to win and we had to release these hardcore psychos out into the wild, into the public. It would never happen. I get that. I would be interested. I kind of would be interested to see that. I know. Makes me a bad person, right? Don't lie. Don't lie. You too. You too are like, oh shit, I didn't think about that. 100 guys on death row. Maybe we take 10 years off their sentence, see if that does it. So they're not getting out right away, and we would kill at least 30 guys on death row because the gorilla would get them. But yeah, get some cameras, get a big, you know, area inside a courtyard of a Supermax. You know, you're a sick fuck. That's an animal. That's an animal that would be terrified and traumatized. That gorilla didn't ask for this. Oh yeah, the inmates, the death row guys, well, fuck them. They're on death row for a reason. They killed a human. So yeah. All right. It's probably time to end the podcast after that. Thank you to AJ Perez for joining me. Fascinating documentary coming up. I can't wait to watch it. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. This concludes the free portion of this week's Zabecast. If you would like to get Fridays as well, Scott and Solly, my boys from the Fox Sports One Days, join me on Fridays. And it's a mere $5 a month or $4.38 if you buy it a year at a time. You get 12 months for the price of 11. And if you're going week by week, I think it's $1.13 per week. It's less than a cup of coffee per week. And I appreciate all those who subscribe. And by the way, you get these regular Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday episodes ad-free. So you got that going for you as well. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thursday, and we will see you next time. Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at my bookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules, you name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code Zabe. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code Zabe to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag.